Since the year 2000, the number of state troopers on Iowa's roads has dropped more than 20%. This can delay accident response time and force officers to make hard decisions about where they're needed most. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Iowa State Troopers Association says the patrol needs to hire an additional 87 state troopers to protect public safety. In the first half hour, we'll talk with two veteran state troopers. Then, in light of the Boston bombing, we'll talk with Washington County Sheriff Jerry Dunbar and Jason Halifax of the Des Moines Police Department about how they handle dangerous situations. That's all coming up this hour, right after the news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Iowa State Patrol needs to hire an additional 87 state troopers to provide the public with an appropriate staffing level to protect public safety. That's according to the Iowa State Troopers Association. I want to talk about this first hour, the work of Iowa State troopers and their perceived need. Joining us, Darren Snedden is with us, president of the Iowa State Trooper Association. He's been a trooper for 24 years. Also, Jeff Driscoll, vice president of the Iowa State Trooper Association, and has been a trooper for 26 years. Darren Snedden, Jeff Driscoll, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Together, you have 50 years of experience. We hope that in this conversation, you can tell us a little bit about some of the experiences that you've had that are relevant to our discussion today, and we also hope that our listeners will join in with any questions that you have about the work of the Iowa State Patrol. Perhaps you'd like to share an instance when you interacted with an Iowa State trooper. 1-866-780-9100 is our toll-free number. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, we're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let me start with you, Darren Snedden, as president of the Iowa State Trooper Association. Make the case for needing more state troopers.
Well, we appreciate the time this morning. Ben, Jeff, and I are happy to join your radio show. And in answering your question, as you well know, and the Iowa State Patrol is very strong in tradition of courtesy, service, and protection. We are, as troopers, our association is made up by the troopers of Iowa. We are very, very passionate of the job, the service we provide to the state of Iowa, to the citizens of Iowa. Unfortunately, over the past several years, we have had a decrease in trooper numbers, trooper strength. That has come simply because of economical times. Our troopers, through normal attrition, being retirements, separations from the job, or just simply leaving the patrol for other job opportunities, either in law enforcement or outside of law enforcement, we've had troopers leave over the years, and with the economic times that we've had in Iowa over the past several years, we were unfortunate that we were unable to replace those troopers as quickly as we were losing them. Therefore, currently, we are down approximately right around 100 troopers in our state, where we were at one point a high number of 455 currently today, and a number that changes, unfortunately, almost weekly. We are down to 363 trooper and trooper supervisors in the state of Iowa now.
Mm-hmm. What evidence can either of you provide that this is just too few? How do we know? What is the measuring stick here?
Well, to speak on that point, it's when we have calls of service that the troopers go on, whether it be in inclement weather, snowstorms, whatever it might be, some of the impacts that we see as state troopers. Number one is when we go to work each day, each shift, the number of troopers that we are working with in our assigned given areas. Years ago, we might go to work and there would be several troopers working in a 6-county area. Today, it's common that there might only be 2 or even 3 troopers working in that same area. In response to that also, with fewer troopers, it is possible and does happen that our response time to emergency situations, whether it be accidents, whether it be emergency calls, such as a bank robbery like we've had in this state in the past couple months, such as that, the response time of the troopers that are working can and sometimes are longer than what they would be if we had more troopers working that given shift.
Mm-hmm. Can you point to any real-life examples, something that either of you have experienced, where that slower response time in certain cases has made a critical difference?
Well, I'll speak first of one that I have been directly involved in, and then I'll let Jeff speak about any that he might have in his area. I work the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area. Just in one instance where I realized a longer response time was a while ago, some time ago, I was working my shift, which was the evening shift, a night shift. During this shift, I was working with two other troopers in a six-county area, so we had three troopers working a total of six-county area. My assigned area that night was the Lynn-Johnson County area. We did have a call out of Tama County in the Tama-Toledo area where there was a very, very serious personal injury accident. Once a trooper is on duty and we get calls such as an accident or routine enforcement such as a drunk driver, this takes those troopers out of the ability to be called to other calls such as an accident. In this case, I was the closest trooper in my area to this accident, which was in the Tama County area. As I said, I was just south of Cedar Rapids on Interstate 380 in northern Johnson County. So I was approximately 40, 45 miles or even further away from this serious accident. Now, due to the seriousness, the State Patrol was asked to respond, which we did, and I, at that point, left my area to proceed to the accident. Obviously, 45 miles away, trying to get there as soon as I possibly can. The injured were being treated by the Sheriff's Department over there and also first responders and medical attention, so we knew that the people were being taken care of. But to make sure that I got there as soon as I possibly could to take care of the accident investigation, it did take longer to get there, obviously traveling from 45 miles away at a faster speed than a routine call would be. And obviously when we get called to emergencies, we do have to drive faster than the posted speed limits at times. Mm-hmm. And that's just one instance that I can think of off the top of my head.
Jeff Driscoll, do you have an example?
I have one that personally just happened here not too long ago where there was the Dubuque Police Department started a chase with some individuals that were believed to be involved in a meth lab. They chased them out of the city where a deputy and myself were involved in the chase. The deputy ended up at a crash scene as a result of this chase, and I was by myself, and I chased these individuals for over approximately 45 minutes by myself because there's no one else in the area. And then they finally did crash and went on foot. And so basically I'm out there all by myself, and in this situation where I didn't know if these people had guns. We had a general idea that they had a meth lab in their vehicle. But in the rural areas like we normally travel, that's not uncommon now. That, like Darren said, there's just not as many troopers out there or officers that are able to assist.
So, Jeff Driscoll, it sounds to me like you're saying you feel and other state troopers feel less safe now in carrying out your duty of courtesy service and protection.
When you say safe, we're very proud. Like Darren said, we're very proud of what we do and how we do our jobs. We're trained. We're going to go and do whatever needs to be done. We're not going to sit back and say, "Oh, geez, we're short a couple people." We're going to go and we're going to try and take care of the situation. But to make it easier and safer for everybody, from citizens to the troopers, other officers, whatever, we do need more people.
Mm-hmm. Darren Sneddon, do you feel less safe out there?
I agree completely with how Jeff answered your question. I can't say that I feel less safe just because of the training that we are provided is excellent training. We train a lot, and we're prepared for any situation. I would say this. We are, when we're by ourselves, at a heightened sense of what's going on around us, so we are very aware of what's going on, and it would be safer for everyone if we had replacement troopers.
Mm-hmm. The Iowa Senate Democrats have recently approved a $560 million budget, which would, I understand, include funding for 11 more troopers, not the 87 that you're asking for. Is the 11 adequate in this case at this time, Darren Sneddon?
I would like to say yes. Thank you very much for for the Senate in appropriating 11 new troopers, 11, I shouldn't say new, 11 replacement troopers that we had before. We feel that is a very good starting place. We have a very good relationship with the Senate and the House, and we appreciate the Senate adding those monies to add 11 troopers. To speak on the 87, that is a number that we have from a outside independent scientific study that was done through the Northwestern University. And that 87 was a number that was come up through a formula that university, that outside agency, feels Iowa should have additional to the troopers that we have working. 11 is a very, very nice number to start with, and we appreciate that. We would like to see 11 to 20 for the first year, but yes, we are happy with 11.
If you'd like to join us with your question about the work of the Iowa State Patrol, we have two men with combined experience as Iowa State troopers at 50 years, totaling their combined experience. If you'd like to ask a question about how the Iowa State Patrol works or share an instance when you interacted with the Iowa State Patrol with a trooper, 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. Now, tell us a little bit about your work, because I imagine some people are not clear how the work of an Iowa State trooper is different than, say, local police or the sheriff, who also works in a rural setting much of the time.
Yeah, I'll answer that, and then if Jeff would like to add in, please feel free, Jeff. The Iowa State Patrol and troopers that work for the patrol, we have a very unique job, as does all law enforcement. It's a very rewarding job. But as a trooper, and how I've seen my career over the past 24 years, we go to work each day not knowing what exactly we're going to encounter each and every shift. We go to work, we go get in our car, we go out there, we start doing, if we have an assignment, we go direct to our assignment. Otherwise, we go out, we do routine patrol, speed enforcement, OWI, criminal interdiction, whatever it might be at that given time. At any time, we can be called from those duties to an assignment, such as an accident, such as a broken down motorist, whatever it may be. So our job changes. It's very fluid from minute to minute, second to second each day. And over the past years that I've been working, I have noticed, and I'm sure Jeff can would agree with me, that this job has become more dangerous. As we go to work each day, the calls that we get called to or the situations that we come upon are more frequent of a dangerous nature, such as armed subjects, such as domestic assaults, domestic abuse, whatever it might be. So the job has evolved and I think changed a little bit over the years that I've been serving.
Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on that, Jeff Driscoll, especially the point where you feel the job and you've been serving over the last three decades nearly, how it's become more dangerous? Why?
That's a very good question. I wish I could give you a good answer on why. All I can say that it has. For an example, last night in my night shift, like Darren stated, if we don't have an assignment, you basically go to work. We enforce traffic laws. We assist other agencies. And within the first 4 hours, I responded to two domestic assaults, a motorcycle wreck with injury, and an alarm. And that was just in my first 4 hours. And so we never know what we're going to get into. But our training does, of course, come into play. We are ready for different situations, and that's what our whole goal is to give the citizens of Iowa and whoever's traveling through our state the safest means that everybody is safe so they can get to where they're going safely.
Mm-hmm. Some people may argue that we have new technology. We have speed cameras, for instance. You don't have to sit along the highway in some stretches and have your radar on or use the airplanes to catch speeding violators. Doesn't that decrease the need for state troopers or at least take some burden off the state patrol?
I would like to answer that. The area I work, the Cedar Rapids area, there are speed cameras that are along Interstate 380. And in response, and the Troopers Association's stance on speed cameras are, they are utilized in our state in certain areas. Does that decrease the need for the number of state troopers? In our opinion, absolutely not. And the reason for that is those speed cameras, in the situations they're used, those people that, if you will, are caught speeding or running a red light, whatever it may be, at the locations that they're placed, that is different than having a human asset standing outside the door that the person that is accused of doing the speeding or running a red light can ask, can confront the person that is accusing them. So I know that there has been talks about speed cameras in Iowa, and as far as the Troopers Association in Iowa goes, that is a discussion on the lawmakers and the people in those positions to make the decisions if they're needed or if they're not.
Are you glad that they're there rather than not being there, Darren Sneddon?
Am I glad they're there? I would say that they have their place. People are aware that they are there. I have noticed in my working my area that people do slow down because they know that they are there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's try to get a call or two on before we have to end this half of the program with our state troopers, Darren Sneddon, president of the Iowa State Trooper Association, and Jeff Driscoll, vice president of the association. Let's go to Patrick in Dyersville. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I've got an observation and then a question. I had the opportunity to serve with two troopers on the recent deployment by the Iowa National Guard to Afghanistan, and I won't name them by name. I'm sure Darren and Jeff both know them personally. I just had a great honor and pride, and one of the questions I had was, you know, how is that affecting their numbers? We've been at war for 12 years. That's pulling troopers out of the line, and I want to, again, I won't mention their names, but I want to, you know, that's something that has to be taken into account. These individuals have served twice or continue to serve. They're serving the state of Iowa. They're serving their country. And I know Jeff personally in the community, Trooper Driscoll, and I know he's a leader in the community as far as the schools and the church. Mm-hmm. And I just, this is a case where state patrolmen, troopers, more is better because they don't only serve their job day to day. I think they're leaders in their communities and throughout the state.
Patrick, thank you from Dyersville. That question, has the extensive deployments by the National Guard to Iraq, to Afghanistan, how has it affected the Iowa State troopers?
Well, I'd like to first of all say thank you to Patrick for his service to our nation and what he has done for us. It's very much appreciated. We do have several troopers or many troopers in our ranks that and supervisors in our ranks for the State Patrol that serve in the capacity also as a soldier, and we appreciate that very much. To answer your question, what that simply does is when these men and women serve our country and are taken out of the ranks of trooper or supervisor for the patrol to go serve, that's another person down for the state patrol. So the troopers that are assigned the road or supervisor positions, they pick up that person in their absence and are happy to do so because we are happy that our fellow troopers serve. But it does take one more person out of the rotation of the schedule.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to Bruce in Des Moines. Hi, Bruce.
Well, I was listening earlier, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but I believe you said patrol and supervisors have gone from a high of 450-ish down to the upper 300s. I'm wondering, in that same period of time, how the non-patrol staff has changed. Has there been a shift of money away from patrol to non-patrol staff? Has that reduced also? What sort of changes have you seen?
Well, when we have that's a good question to ask. And to answer that, as far as the amount of, I would say, support personnel that we have in the State Patrol, those numbers, we know we have, it's very diverse. We have people that work within the State Patrol ranks that are radio operators that put our squad cars together, that are clerical workers, and they're all very necessary, and they all work very hard to support the troopers. Yes, I would say their numbers have also gone down just because the number of troopers have gone down. And I know, for instance, at our garage where our cars are put together, I know those numbers, those people in there work extremely hard to get these cars out to the troopers that need them. And I know that they do that with a reduced staff, and it puts a stress strain on the people that are actually still doing able to or that are doing the job there. So I do believe those numbers have gone down also.
Trooper Sneddon and Trooper Driscoll, in the second half of the program, we're going to be talking to law enforcement officers about how they handle danger and how they keep themselves safe while at the same time serving and protecting the public. As Iowa State Troopers, what would you say are your biggest safety concerns to your personal safety? What scenario do you think is the most dangerous do you come upon?
Well, I'll answer that one. Actually, every scenario is dangerous to us as troopers. You can never be relaxed. You can never, but there again, you want to always make sure that you're treating people the way they need to be treated. And so on, but in the back of your mind, you always have that idea that this could go bad real quick. So you always have to be on your toes. So there's never a situation, traffic stop, that is exactly the same.
Darren Sneddon, anything to add to that?
I agree completely with Jeff. Every time we exit our car, whether it be as we're getting out, we're watching traffic on from the shoulder as it travels by us, whether we're on interstate or a county road or a primary highway, whatever it may be, making contact with the person that we're speaking with at the time, and then going right into a domestic situation where that's always tense because everybody's stress level is up in that case. It just every instance in State Patrol, that's why we have the training we have, and is we are aware of what's going on around us at all times.
And finally, Trooper Sneddon, did you watch the coverage of the apprehension of the final bombing suspect in Boston?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and Jeff Driscoll as well?
Yes, I did.
I'm wondering about your thoughts. You both have different, more informed perspectives than most of us. Jeff Driscoll, can you please quickly share your thoughts?
There's a perfect example of you never know what or when, but we've got to be ready at every instance to be able to handle such situations. You mentioned traffic cameras before. Traffic cameras can't respond to such a situation. You need bodies. You need, troopers that are trained to be able to go into Cedar Rapids during the floods, to go up to where the tornadoes were, to apprehend bank robbers, to whatever. You've got to have numbers to be able to make sure we're able to complete the job safely.
Trooper Sneddon.
Yeah, in response, I also watched the unfoldings in Boston and was happy with the outcome that they were able to apprehend the suspect alive, and I think the officers and the command staff out there did an excellent job in the way that situation was handled.
Was that? What did you think of the applause that met the law enforcement as they withdrew from the area? That unusual has to be a good sight for you, Darren Sneddon.
Well, that is such a stressful situation that that whole community and that whole our whole nation went through that evening. I'm sure everybody that was able to watch TV or were from our own homes or from out their back windows of where it was happening, it's such a stressful, uncomfortable time for everyone involved. I'm sure everybody was happy that the situation was over and that it had been completed and there was closure at that specific time that the person was apprehended.
Trooper Darren Sneddon, president of the Iowa State Trooper Association, and Trooper Jeff Driscoll, vice president of the Iowa State Trooper Association, thank you for joining us this half hour.
Thank you very much.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll be talking with Washington County's Sheriff, Jerry Dunbar, president of the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association, also Jason Halifax of the Des Moines Police Department. We'll ask them about how the people who are protecting us, serving us, protect themselves in cases of danger. When we return, this is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support comes from Iowa Valley Habitat for Humanity Restore, accepting donations of unwanted building materials, working appliances, and furniture at 2401 Scott Boulevard. Spring cleaning helps build more homes. More at iowavalleyhabitat.org.
So glad to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 3 out of 4 Americans see occasional terrorism as part of life in the future. Do you? That is according to the latest poll by the Pew Research Center. It's a percentage that is up in the wake of last week's bombings in Boston. Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk about changing public attitudes towards terrorism and how the Boston bombing is affecting the debate over immigration. That's Politics Day tomorrow on this program. Today, we're talking about law enforcement. Last week, over 40 million Americans tuned in to watch coverage of the final hours of that manhunt for the remaining suspected bomber in Boston. Cheering crowds greeted law enforcement as they withdrew once the suspect was apprehended and the city was released from that tense lockdown during the manhunt. So we thought it would be interesting to hear the perspective of law enforcement when faced with dangerous situations, to learn about their practices for keeping the public safe while at the same time staying safe themselves. And joining us to do this this half hour in our Des Moines studio, Sheriff Jerry Dunbar. He is president of the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association, also the sheriff of Washington County. Sheriff Dunbar, welcome to our program.
Good day.
And also with us, Jason Halifax is with us, public information officer for the Des Moines Police Department, also has some much experience as an officer on the street, as well as in the SWAT team in Des Moines, I believe, and the bomb squad. Officer Halifax, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's pick up there with Boston, since that's in our news, and so appreciative, not only in Boston, but countrywide, of having the law enforcement reaction that we did in that case. You both watched the coverage, I assume?
Yeah, sure did. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You have this different, more informed perspective. Share it with us, perhaps a thought or two that you think might not have been covered in the media, that your inside perspective gives you about how that unraveled, how that unfolded that day.
One of the things I think that kind of occurred to me, and you touched on it when you introduced me, I spent time on the bomb squad here in Des Moines, and when the reports came out about the car chase, and these individuals were throwing what sounded like a homemade grenade, some type of IED at pursuing officers. From my perspective, I would say when you officers involved in that type of once the car chase ended and the foot chase ensued, then it was the manhunt thing. That's a huge consideration, obviously. We haven't encountered, thankfully, a whole lot of bombings or kind of like in that nature yet in the United States, and hopefully that trend won't continue. But that's a huge consideration. It's, explosives, if they're hard to detect on people, they can hide them pretty easy, and it's seems to be a little, I don't know, I guess a guy with a gun, I think if I got a gun, I'm a little more evenly matched with him. When he's got an explosive device he could throw or perhaps detonate in my direction, that's right. Kind of heightens things a bit.
Also, because of the urban environment, Jason Halifax, that as a former member of a SWAT team, a bomb squad, that complicates things enormously.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got people to worry about around you, houses, property. If bullets would start flying, there's a lot more things that can go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Sheriff Dunbar, your thoughts about the Boston bombing and how that came out?
Well, obviously, it's a tragic event that had happened in this country with 9/11 preceding that. It does make you wonder if this is going to become more the norm as it is over across the ocean and over in England with the bombings they have and the more terrorism. Hopefully it won't. I think nationwide we have good security. We just need to keep the training up, which I know everyone is on their minds now, but sometimes we seem as Americans to forget pretty easy. And so as long as we keep following up on the training and know the threats there or the possibility of a threat, I think that's what we need to stay on that. Different types of training, and just keep our eyes on how it is evolving and keep up with that evolution.
Mm-hmm. You said keep up with the training. How well prepared? Of course, no one knows by its nature where terrorism may happen next. How well do you two feel we are in Iowa? Iowa law enforcement is prepared for acts of terror. Jason, could you start us off there?
Well, I think we've done actually pretty well. In my time with the bomb squad, I know we've got, I don't know exactly how many bomb squads we have in Des Moines, or in Iowa exactly, 5 or 6, I believe. But it's a constant training that they're required to undergo as technicians. And I know, at least in our agency, we provide ongoing training both to our people, and we have done others for other agencies as well. So we're making the moves we need to make to keep everyone kind of in the loop and really keep them aware of things.
Sheriff Dunbar?
Absolutely agree. Washington County, we're a smaller or probably a medium-sized county. We actually have a SWAT team of ourselves. We have one police department, and we train together, and our county does monthly training at least. We try to do more than that if we can. But how things have really changed is not just sticking, okay, this is our area, but we use other counties and other PDs, and we've consolidated on our own just to help each other out. This past month, I know my team leader for the SWAT team has assisted in one other town and two other counties as far as like the meth labs where you've got an active meth lab in there. But just working together and going to different seminars and learning how different events fold and staying on top of that.
Drake University, of course, based in Des Moines, Jason Halifax, have the events in Boston last week changed security for this week's Drake Relays?
Yes, they have. And as soon as after Monday's bombing in Boston, already Tuesday morning, we were meeting again with Drake officials to kind of change and add to what our security plan already was in place for the relays.
In what way?
Well, we've added many more officers. We'll have a much larger visible police presence at the events. We've always had bomb squad, bomb techs, bomb sniffing dogs on available to use, but they'll actually be on hand during this week's events. We've got it'll be 24-hour security or surveillance, I should say, at most of the, at least at the Drake Stadium. We're actually using a fair number of surveillance cameras that we have placed strategically around Drake security, or correction, Drake campus and stuff, that will be monitored on a constant basis.
One of the big questions in the media, in the coverage of the Boston bombings, has been, are these terrorists domestic in origin? Do they have connections overseas? Is this foreign-born somehow, foreign-inspired? For people in law enforcement, does that make a difference, Sheriff Dunbar?
It does, but you still got to deal with your domestic terrorism as well.
If you're dealing with an incident, for you on the ground, it makes a difference whether it is in an act of terrorism, a foreign terrorist or a domestic terrorist?
It depends on the situation. Domestic terrorists can be just about anything as far as letting animals loose. So you're going to have something different as if that is weapons or something that is going to cause mass casualties.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that, Jason Halifax?
Certainly we see a little different aspect, and certainly the sheriff mentioned that perhaps out in the rural areas, you may have something along that may affect farms. Usually in Des Moines, you see something a little different than that. We look at it more in terms of a mass casualty event, whether it be an active shooter or an explosive or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if, in talking about danger generally, and you both have many, many years of service behind you, do you develop an antenna for danger as you gain more experience? And I'm not just talking about terrorism, but when you walk up to a car that's been speeding, Jerry Dunbar.
Absolutely. We have some law enforcement that, you know, it gets mundane and so it's, you know, never happened before. I think the attitudes have really changed here in the past 5 or 6 years where you don't know what to expect. And the next time it could be me being the one involved. One thing that we get used to locally is like going to a domestic call or a disturbance call. And unfortunately, the county next to us, Sergeant Eric Stein, was killed, shot down on not necessarily a routine call, but something that was it's not uncommon. Mm-hmm. And my guys, two of them actually came from that county. Grew up in that county, and I had hired them. So they were personal friends with the deputy. And just ever since that incident, plus other things that have happened, you just got to be more on your toes. And every call, every vehicle stop is a different incident, and just you got to be aware.
Tell us a little bit more. I think the Des Moines Police, Jason Halifax, Officer Halifax, and other emergency personnel worked at the scene of a standoff in Des Moines this past weekend. What can you tell us about that?
Sheriff actually kind of touched on a point here, too, that was kind of typified with that whole standoff, is it's sometimes easy to get a little bit complacent in the routine stuff, the routine traffic stops and those types of things.
This is the way that started.
It wasn't actually a traffic stop, but it was a routine call for service. It was actually, the call came in as a domestic dispute, a half a dispute, which was a property issue, which I did some quick numbers looking before I came. In the last 7 days, we've had over 270 calls for service in Des Moines PD for domestics, and over 70 of those were just a half a proper, half a domestic or half a dispute or a property dispute. So it's a very, very common trip for us to respond to. And that's how it began. It was the individual, Mr. Reed, who's now in custody, had called upset about a property dispute he had had earlier in the daytime with a female companion of his. And he had called because he wasn't happy with how that property dispute was handled between him and her. And he called basically us to make a complaint on her based on the property settlement.
Mm-hmm.
When
the
officer arrived and spoke with him, and was while he was preparing to do his report, a third party had called in to our dispatch center and mentioned that to Mr. Reed that he had just met with was possibly suicidal and armed. So we sent more officers to respond with the one that was there, and they made recontact with Mr. Reed in person. Ultimately, he became upset, fired a shot at us, one of our officers. Our officers returned fire, didn't strike him, but he barricaded himself in his house, and the standoff ensued.
Mm-hmm. How did it end?
Favorably, or well for all the parties. Ultimately, Mr. Reed was coaxed out of the house, was offered some cigarettes is what the offer was. He came out to retrieve those. He was shot with a taser and then taken into custody without relatively unharmed.
Mm-hmm. You said a domestic dispute in this case, domestic abuse and things like that. Could you always put a finger on when you know the danger barometer is going up, when you sense danger? Or is it sometimes a sixth sense, Sheriff Dunbar?
You hit on it there. A lot of it is that what we call a gut feeling that something just isn't right here. Sometimes it, and most of the time, it does pan out to be nothing. But there is something that just alerts you that you need to be paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Officer Halifax, have you had a sixth sense experience as well?
Yeah, I think all law enforcement does sooner or later. And as you, the more years you spend doing the job, the better it develops. And there may be something you, maybe just a little thing you see or something that draws your attention at each incident, or maybe it is just a feeling. But yeah, it becomes honed the more you do this job.
You mentioned that you used a taser, Officer Halifax. Sheriff Dunbar, is that widely used also in among sheriffs and deputies across Iowa?
It is. It's been a very good, effective tool to detain people and control people.
Mm-hmm. What is the – when do you engage a person with taser?
It depends. Basically, they are going to – they're a threat, going to hurt somebody – hurt themselves. It may be someone that is totally out of control, again, going to hurt themselves or do some damage. The taser is quick and, subdues them very, very quickly. And there's not much wounding afterwards. You pulled a couple prongs out, and it's no more than like getting a shot at the doctor.
I understand in practice, or at least maybe a YouTube video that you actually, in practice, can do this on each other?
Yes, that's
so. Have each of you experienced a taser?
Yes.
Yeah, I have as well.
Jason Halifax, describe what it feels like.
The best way I can describe it is for those of us who are handyman or maybe try to be handyman around home, when you're maybe working on electricity or around with your receptacles or plugs and you kind of get bit by the electricity coming into you, that's what it feels like, but it's in your whole body. If I'm changing out my plug at home and I touch the wire, my hand kind of gets a little nip, the taser, your whole body feels it.
And you lose control of your body.
You do. I don't want to say you seize up. Some people kind of seize up. Some kind of do a little minor convulsing. But you lose control of your muscles.
I understand, Sheriff Dunbar, that the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association Board of Directors meets tomorrow in Des Moines. I wonder if you could share what the chief concerns that will be talked about at this director's meeting.
We have a meeting once a month except for June, and sometimes we do not meet in May. A lot of it is legislative meetings that we're going over or changes in administrative rules in the jail. This particular month, however, is just getting caught up on a few loose ends, some people wanting to we're trying to raise some money for the memorial fund, for the Peace Officers Memorial Fund down by the DPS building. Just some small, minor cleanup things that we're doing this year or this month.
Of course, we often come into contact with law enforcement as observers. We see law enforcement rushing through at high speed sometimes on an assignment, on a call. I wonder, when you have to put your sirens and lights on and drive at high speed, are there mistakes car drivers not involved commonly make in trying to get out of your way? Jason Halifax?
Yeah, probably the most frequent things I've seen experienced here in Des Moines has been them not getting out of the way or not getting over. It's easy for an officer who's trying to respond quickly to want to go around a vehicle who's not moving, but the danger may be if I move to go around this vehicle, they may decide, oh yeah, I need to get over. And then, you know, possibly may have a collision. So that's been the biggest thing that I've seen. It's just whether it's being unattentive to me behind them or just not caring.
But there's some people who might have their earbuds in or loud music going on in their cars and just incredibly not hear the siren.
Absolutely. And then especially if it's daylight, it's harder to see our flashing lights. You know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, I might not buy that argument, but at 2 in the afternoon, that may be a factor.
Sheriff Dunbar, anything to add to that?
Out in the rural area, one of the things I consider, and some people argue with me on this, but as far as turning lights and sirens on during the daytime after a rain, my concern is, and I've told my guys, if you can make a safe pass after a rain where the shoulder's muddy or very soft, go ahead and make the pass without your lights and sirens, because I've seen too many times where people hit the ditch at too high of a rate of speed. They don't slow down before they pull over and have gone in the ditch, and then we have another accident. So there's just different things to consider with different types of weather and condition.
And I think this is a fairly new law, several years old yet. When an emergency vehicle is pulled over on the shoulder on, say, a two-lane road, you as someone passing need to get on the inside lane, right? Give them a lane between you and what's going on. Isn't that right?
Yes.
And that is a fineable offense if you don't do that, right?
It's the same as a fare to yield to an emergency vehicle. It is a $100 fine. You tack on surcharges and court costs, it'll be $200.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association Board of Directors meeting tomorrow. Is the Boston bombing, all that happened last week, something that will be talked about, you imagine?
Probably not with the association. I mean, there'll be some talk about it, but we don't have an agenda item for that. We usually leave that up to the individual sheriffs, how they want to address that in their counties.
Now, I know cameras have become a big part of law enforcement work. Jason Halifax, can you tell us how typically officers are outfitted with cameras?
Well, actually, our SROs, I've lost numbers now, 7, maybe 8 or 9 of them. That's our school resource officers. All actually wear a body camera now, right in the middle of their chest, on the front of their uniform. And they can record all contact with students or whoever they come in contact with during the day.
What trips it?
Just a little flip of a switch. It's the camera lens is a little covering, and they just have to slide it up or slide it down, and then it just turns on. At the end of the day, they come to their computer and download it onto a server that we keep, and then we keep track of that for whether it's evidence or whatever. And then, of course, our squad cars, and I'm not certain we're 100% outfitted with them, but we're probably in the mid-90% of our cars outfitted with surveillance cameras, but dash cams that shoot pictures straight forward from the driver's seat or from the passenger seat. Also, they shoot back towards the passenger compartment in the event we have a prisoner in there.
Have those cameras we have about a minute left, prevented certain events or altercations?
Not necessarily prevented certain events. They prevented complaints on our officers that aren't founded.
I see. So you have the evidence right there.
We do.
Quickly, before we have to go, since the tragic Newtown shooting in December, have your forces received additional training?
we have in Des Moines, we're I forget the acronym. There's a way or a training the schools are looking at and how to help students who are caught in those situations fight back, basically.
Sheriff Dunbar?
Yes, it's the ALICE training. And we've surrounding counties, we've all gotten together and gone through it. It's a little controversial some, but I believe it is definitely a way to go to fight back instead of just be a sheep and stay there.
Jason Halifax, Public Information Officer for the Des Moines Police Department. Jerry Dunbar, President of the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association and the Sheriff of Washington County. Thank you, sirs, for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk about terrorism in the wake of last week's bombings in Boston. 3 out of 4 Americans now see occasional terrorism as part of life in the future. Do you? Join our conversation tomorrow. We'll talk about changing public attitudes toward terrorism and how the Boston bombing is affecting the debate over immigration and possibly other debates. Politics Day tomorrow on this program. River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our technical support from Dennis Reese in Des Moines today. Help from John Pemble, the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.